In mid-March, Chris Bragg, the Capital Bureau chief for the online nonprofit news outlet New York Focus, broke the news that Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie was engaged in a romantic relationship with a lobbyist whose employer has business under consideration at the Capitol and in front of the Assembly specifically. The reporting reveals, for the first time, the steps the powerful legislative leader has taken and has not taken to avoid a conflict of interest. To date, Speaker Hastie has declined to publicly discuss the recusal process that has been implemented, claiming it is part of his personal life and something he will not talk about. Chris Bragg joins us on the Capitol Press Room to discuss the story, including why it matters and how he got his scoop. Welcome back to the show, Chris, and congrats on this important story.
Thanks for having me.
So obviously, as a journalist, I think this is important, but for the listeners, can you explain why it's newsworthy that the speaker, who is not married, is in a romantic relationship with a lobbyist whose firm has business before the state?
Yeah, you know, when I first heard about this relationship, I did wrestle with whether it was something that should be reported on. I don't think that a public official's private life necessarily should be something that's written about all the time. In this case, Carl Hastie's just, you know, he's one of the most powerful people in the state. The person he's dating is a legislative lobbyist who was lobbying the Assembly. There were internal issues at her workplace over it that I found out about. Hastie's predecessor, Sheldon Silver, had a trial a lot based on conflicts of interest around his work and outside income he was earning. There was also information that came out about his relationship with a lobbyist during that trial. So I think, you know, since that time, there's been more of a standard in Albany of expecting, you know, from good government groups and such that there should be some sort of recusal policy that's put out for these things. Of course, there's, you know, lots of factors to consider. They're not married. How serious is the relationship? So I think there's a fine line. But in this case, I made the call that, you know, with my editors that we should go forward with this.
And there is precedent for something like this because the press corps here at the Capitol has questioned the governor about the recusal process related to her husband's business dealings in the past. But for context, the lobbyist in question, who do they work for and what are they trying to get here at the Capitol?
Yeah, it's called Greater New York Lesset. It's a cooperative between basically the Mason Tenders Union, which is a building trades union, and their signatory contractors. So it works for the shared interests of the union and the contractors. They're trying to get a bill right now that would require the State University of New York to use union labor on big construction projects at SUNY. They're involved with the 421A housing tax break replacement negotiations. So some big issues that are in front of Hastie are things that they're lobbying on. And in some cases, this particular lobbyist who's dating Hastie has lobbied the Assembly staff. So there's some overlap on those things.
Well, as part of your reporting, you highlighted the recusal process that the speaker has put in place to essentially isolate himself from direct interactions with his girlfriend's firm. Can you talk a little bit about what has been put in place?
First of all, he's never publicly put out a policy. His romantic interests employer got a copy of the policy. It was only written recently, a couple weeks ago in March. It was written because the woman that Hastie is dating was trying to get permission to lobby the Assembly. She had somebody from the Speaker's office write up this policy to try to convince her employer that she should be able to do so. To my knowledge, this policy was never put in writing until a couple weeks ago. Hastie apparently had told some of his senior staff about things that he was going to do, various protocols, not meeting with certain groups connected to this woman and other things like that. But to my knowledge, it had not been put in writing until a couple weeks ago.
And in terms of when it was put into writing, how, if at all, does that coincide with when you began asking questions about it?
It was put into writing a couple days before I began asking questions. It was because she was trying to get permission to lobby the Assembly. I do think that behind the scenes, the fact that she was continuing to try to do this despite her employer not wanting her to do it may have contributed to them ultimately confirming to me that some of these things were going on, because I think there was some displeasure that they were unable to resolve this situation in terms of her not lobbying the Assembly and she was going forward with it.
And what do we know about the speaker's plan in terms of isolating himself from this lobbyist's business interests?
there were two things that were in this letter. Hasty would not meet with certain groups, Greater New York Lesset, which is the firm that she directly works for, the Mason Tenders, the union arm of that, and a couple other unions. The other thing was that if there were issues specific to those interests that came before Hasty's office, supposedly what's going to happen is his senior staff is going to come to a consensus decision about what should occur and come to him with that decision. It's a little unclear if then he would still have any decision-making role or not, but there was just this brief letter outlining those two things, and that's all we have at this point.
And I just want to reiterate, he hasn't addressed any of this with the media, and from reading your stories, it doesn't seem like you had any in-depth engagement with the speaker on how he plans to take care of this.
No, you know, he says his private life is his private life. I know that some colleagues in the Capitol Press Corps asked him about this last week. He responded a little bit irritably to it, naturally, I think, but he's not acknowledged the relationship public to me or to anyone else. And so it seems like he's trying to kind of leave it at that.
Well, for listeners just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're speaking with New York-focused Capitol Bureau Chief Chris Bragg. So you mentioned earlier some of the issues that are at play here with the lobbyist's firm. Are those things that the speaker has engaged with in any way publicly over recent months? Has he talked about any of these interests that the unions have?
I do know that at a press gaggle recently, he talked about the 421A replacement issue. That's a tax break for developers in New York City to incentivize building affordable housing that expired a few years ago. He discussed that, the fact that there needed to be an agreement between unions and real estate before that went forward. So, I mean, that's a pretty mild action, in my opinion, to discuss something when asked about it at a press briefing. But what was the alternative? Would he have said, actually, I can't discuss that because I'm dating this person who is involved with it? You know, he didn't. They took every effort not to publicly disclose this, or they really didn't spread it widely at all, to the point that people like a guy from the Mason Tenders Union, when he attended a Hasty fundraiser in February, had no idea that this recusal policy was even in place at that time. And I'm not sure he knew about the relationship at that time. Unclear to me. So,
well, as part of this reporting, you've also highlighted the lobbyist effort to go back to lobbying the assembly. What did the now former ethics advisor for her firm have to say about all this?
Yeah, so that's David Grandow, colorful Albany insider for a long time. He was the former top state lobbying official. So when I called them to try to confirm this, his attitude was really, along with the executive director of the organization, was that they were going to answer the questions. They were going to make it clear that they'd done everything that they could to try to resolve this conflict, to not have her lobby the assembly. And of course, that ended up really backfiring for the executive director of the organization. He had to resign about a week later. And I think that the union was really worried that they had upset Hasty deeply by having their leadership having disclosed this information, and angered Hasty by doing so.
And what's David Grandow's status there now?
So he stayed on as their attorney for maybe a week after this story came out. I wrote him a request for comment recently, asking him what he thought about the new organization leadership at Lesset authorizing this woman to resume lobbying the assembly. And 2 days later, he told me that he had resigned. They'd gone against his advice, and he had resigned. So,
as part of your follow-up story, you also reported on a political contribution that the speaker returned. What's the issue there?
I reached out for comment to Hasty's office on the morning of March 13th. I reached out to his significant other on March 13th. A few hours later, Hasty calls up Michael McGuire. He's the head of the Mason Tenders District Council PAC, and says, I need to return this campaign donation that I got from your organization at a fundraiser in late February. So I think that's notable that, you know, he accepted this campaign donation when it was unknown that this relationship existed. But now that he knows that very soon the relationship's going to become public, he decides to call this individual and return a campaign donation from the Mason Tenders, which, by the way, is one of the groups on the list that he said he would not meet with.
So with the understanding that you might not be able to tell the full story because there are sources you want to protect and how you report your stories, you don't want to necessarily give away all your tips, but you were the only person with this story. How did you get it?
Well, you're right that I don't want to go completely into how it came about. One thing I will say is that a few days before I wrote my story, there were some other stories about the use of the Buffalo Bills suite that Governor Hochul used and Hasty used to go to a regular season game against the Cowboys in mid-December.
Yeah, the Cowboys don't play too many playoff games.
Yeah.
So that's tough.
So on this list of who attended that game, Hasty's name was next to his significant other's name. That started really getting people, I think, to connect the dots a little bit and put a little bit more scrutiny on this. And so at that point, that's when I found out about it.
Do you feel like there are natural follow-up stories to what you've done so far?
I think that the use of this suite at the Buffalo Bills Stadium is interesting. It's supposed to be used for economic development purposes, and I'm wondering what a few of the people there had to do with economic development that were on the guest list, so I think that's interesting. I think there are a few other avenues. I maybe don't want to give away all my story ideas, even though I might have just given you one.
Well, we'll let you take that. But in terms of where this might go moving forward, I've reached out to Assembly Ethics Committee Chair Joanne Simon to see whether they're going to look into this in any way, shape, or form, but have heard crickets to date. Do you think this is something that the Assembly Ethics Committee might look at or other ethics watchdogs in New York?
I don't see anything that immediately jumps out. From the lobbyist perspective, there's a ban on giving gifts over $15 to an elected official, but beyond that, there's no prohibition on a lobbyist dating an elected official. From the public official's perspective, they're not allowed to use their office to give unwarranted privileges to themselves or others. So as long as Hasty didn't, you know, violate this recusal policy that he put in place, maybe it would be okay. You know, there was this person on his list of people that were banned from meeting with him that attended a recent fundraiser. Having said that, campaign donations are not typically considered gifts, so I don't know if that would be a problem. So I'm not sure that there's an immediate thing, but you know, maybe the ethics agency could look into, you know, some aspect of it that I don't know about.
Finally, I'm interested, what sort of personal vitriol, if any, has been directed your way from this reporting? Because I've seen some criticisms of you, criticisms that I don't agree with, but have you been hearing some sort of backlash at all?
Not too much. I'd be interested to know what you've seen.
A former assembly member, I'll flag it for you, thought the speaker should fight you.
Yeah, something. I didn't quite understand what he was saying, but that was Micah Kellner, right?
Yes, who had to leave the assembly for his own problems.
Yeah, related to some sort of issue with the staffer or something. You know, I did not respond to that. I used to be a Twitter warrior to an extent. I may have grown up a little bit or something. But everybody has their opinion, you know. So if that's what he thought, then good for him.
Well, we've been speaking with Chris Bragg. He is the Capitol Bureau Chief for New York Focus. Again, Chris, congrats on the reporting, and thanks again so much for making the time.
All right, thank you.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by National Fuel and its shareholders, a utility providing natural gas service to heat homes and businesses across Western New York. Information on National Fuel's response to proposals to transition away from natural gas service is available at betterplannobans.com.